And as I mentioned, Whitley had been a slave catcher in Lawrence, Kansas before the Civil War. And a lot of people felt that was inherently disqualifying. And in fact, it showed that he did have this kind of opportunistic mercenary side to him.
That's Charles Lane, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Charles Lane is a Washington Post editorial board member, an op-ed columnist. He published two previous books, including The Day Freedom Died. His articles have also appeared in Foreign Affairs, Foreign Policy, and other publications. He joins us to talk about his book, Freedom's Detective: The Secret Service, the Ku Klux Klan, and the Man Who Masterminded America's First War on Terror. Charles, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dan. Glad to be here.
How did you become interested in telling the story of Hiram C. Whitley?
I have written a previous book on Reconstruction, the period after the Civil War, which is a fascinating one to many people and to me especially. And in the course of writing that first book, came across the role of the Secret Service and of Hiram C. Whitley, a few details of his incredible life story. And I thought to myself, this is the most interesting American that I've never heard of before. And I got intrigued and I followed it. And the result is this book.
Well, set the stage for us here. What led to Whitley becoming the head of the Secret Service?
Well, a lot of the story involves your town of Lawrence, Kansas, where he started out his career in a kind of nefarious fashion, betraying the abolitionists in Bleeding Kansas of that time, which forced him to run to New Orleans. And in New Orleans, during the Civil War, he sided with the Union as a spy for General Butler's armed forces there. And Butler and other Republicans and Union generals appreciated Whitley's talent for espionage, the same ones he had used in effect on the other side before the Civil War. And they promoted him as a federal detective, and that led to his career after the war in the Secret Service.
And as the subtitle of your book indicates, this deals with the Ku Klux Klan and the Secret Service. So tell us about, how did the Secret Service take on the Klan? How do they fight against them?
The Secret Service was, at that time, not the Presidential Protection Force we know today. It was the federal government's only group of detectives. They had started out fighting counterfeiters, and under Whitley so effectively that the Justice Department thought they could be used also to infiltrate the Klan in the South. At a time, 1871 and 1872, when that terrorist organization was really almost out of control. And Whitley organized the operation, which was quite extensive across several southern states, basically doing what we would today recognize as undercover and intelligence work, disguising themselves, developing false identities, and basically becoming members of the Klan and informing back to the federal government so that they could make legal cases against them.
As you mentioned, we would consider that just part of the arsenal of tools that are used today by the Secret Service and other organizations. But at that time, was the concept of undercover work somewhat novel and innovative?
Not only that, it was very controversial. Many Americans, even those who opposed the Klan and everything it stood for, were very suspicious of the idea that the national government, the federal government, would have spies in the domestic population. That was something they associated with the tyrannies of Europe, countries like Napoleonic France or Prussia or Russia. And so there was a lot of pushback against the Secret Service just in concept, even when it was combating counterfeiters, something that you would think would be less politically charged than the Klan. And this was something that Whitley himself resisted ferociously. He believed very strongly that without this capability, the United States would never be kind of a serious nation state. And so a big theme of my book is the role of this clandestine capability just in the development of the U.S. government as something capable of enforcing its authority all over the national territory after the Civil War.
So was it the influence of Whitley that resulted in this undercover work? I guess part of what I'm getting at is Whitley's legacy here and how his time with the Secret Service transformed the agency?
Well, it definitely created a stronger cadre of excellent detectives that outlasted him even after his downfall in 1874. And through a lot of the publicity that he gave to their methods, it gradually overcame that kind of instinctive American resistance to these kinds of tactics. And I would argue that one of the legacies of this time is that the federal government never really ever gave up its power to use undercover operations. It's true that the Secret Service kind of went into eclipse after Reconstruction, and we didn't really have a full-fledged federal detective force until the 20th century and the FBI. But this proved to be a permanent innovation in that there would always be at least some power to use undercover detectives at the federal level.
Well, you mentioned his demise. I want to get to that in just a moment, because I assume it's related to what you describe as Whitley's dark side. Tell us a bit about that, and how did that lead to his demise with the Secret Service?
Like many detectives and spies of the 19th century, Hiram C. Whitley's career began on the other side of the law. This was actually one reason detectives were so controversial and in many quarters not respectable at the time, because many of them had been recruited from the ranks of crime. And as I mentioned, Whitley had been a slave catcher in Lawrence, Kansas before the Civil War, and a lot of people felt that was inherently disqualifying. And in fact, it showed that he did have this kind of opportunistic mercenary side to him. And after defeating the Klan, he kind of, in the mid-1870s, got involved in some political dirty tricks in Washington that he just couldn't resist engaging in. He loved covert operations just for their own sake. And when those political dirty tricks were exposed and he was caught, he was forced to resign, and that was the end of his federal career.
You mentioned this grew out of an earlier interest in Hiram C. Whitley. But I'm curious about the research process for this book, because as you mentioned, most people don't know about Whitley. So he was a character who hasn't been written about as much as other historical figures. So tell us a bit about how you went about researching this book.
One of the things I love about being a journalist is a challenge of telling a story that hasn't been told before. And that was also part of what intrigued me about Whitley. He had clearly been very important in his time, and then forgotten by history. So I went back through a lot of archival material, much of it in the old Secret Service records and reports that are on file at the National Archives. I found out in Kansas, the Historical Society of Lyon County, which has some of Whitley's personal records. I went through a lot of the newspapers that are now, for the first time, really easily available online and contain an extraordinary wealth of detail about many of these incidents. And finally, I was able to contact Whitley's own family, who had quite a few interesting records of his family life and photographs that I was able to use. So the excitement of doing this book, and I hope it shows in readers' enjoyment of it, was in kind of tapping all these previously untapped records.
So I'm wondering, as you were going through this research, what surprised you the most?
What surprised me the most was the degree to which Whitley was willing to go up against any kind of resistance that he met, and that there was so much resistance. I would have thought that more people within the government would have recognized the importance of this. But once the Klan had been kind of turned back initially, the political winds kind of shifted in Washington, and people started talking about pardoning members of the Klan. And one of my real revelations was that Whitley got involved in that too. And he went up to New York and interviewed all the Klansmen whose arrests he had assisted in and screened them for pardons and actually prevented what some people were trying to arrange in the terms of a mass pardon. So there's this constant kind of ambivalence that pervades this whole period, where some people are in favor of a very aggressive crackdown and others are not. And Whitley, despite his kind of dark side and his previous record on, say, the wrong side on race, was absolutely unequivocally committed to the crackdown and pursued it in the face of some kind of bureaucratic resistance.
When I talk to authors who have written nonfiction, sometimes they see parallels with what's happening in contemporary times. As you look back on the history of the Secret Service, do you think it informs in any way what you see happening in today's government?
I think there are many parallels, and this is another thing I found so surprising, many parallels between the dilemmas and controversies of this war on terror against the Klan and the war on terror after 9/11. Obviously, the ideological and moral directional arrows are different, but Whitley saw the value of detaining people on an island in a military fort where they could be interrogated. And that's what he did with some Klan suspects in 1868. I wonder if that reminds you of anything. They were put on trial before a military commission because the government had no civilian alternative. There was selective suspension of habeas corpus to get at the Klan, which was something that not only Whitley, but a number of top officials thought was absolutely necessary. So you see that in battling any kind of terrorist threat, the same kind of issues arise. What are the rules of interrogation? What are the rules about access to lawyers? What are the rules about putting them on trial, whether in civilian or military court? And so in that regard, I think one of the goals of my book is to remind people, hey, we've been here before. Let's try and learn from the comparisons.
Charles, thank you very much for talking with me today.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
The book by Charles Lane is Freedom's Detective, The Secret Service, The Ku Klux Klan, and The Man Who Masterminded America's First War on Terror. You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. You can sign up for the Conversations podcast on iTunes, and you'll also find us on Facebook. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.